Hello, I'm David Carr-Howery, Director of Drake University's Environmental Science and Policy Program, and I'd like to thank you all for being here. Last fall, a group of researchers from Iowa State's Climate Science Program put together a statement on how climate change is expected to affect Iowans. That statement urged policymakers to acknowledge the overwhelming evidence that supports the conclusions of the climate community, and it was signed by 44 Iowa scientists working in climate and climate-affected disciplines. This year, there was a great deal of news coverage on the intense drought that affected Iowa and much of the United States, but very little of that coverage followed up with an explanation that climate science suggests this type of weather is likely to become much more frequent in the state in coming decades as global temperatures continue to rise. We felt that it was important to update our previous statement with information discussing the expected increase in extreme wet and dry events as carbon pollution continues to grow. The updated statement was written by a team of climate experts from Iowa State, the University of Iowa, and other institutions, and signed by 138 scientists from 27 Iowa colleges and universities. For too long, the climate discussion has been framed as one that pits the needs of the planet against the needs of the economy, hardship now versus hardship in the still distant future. What we've tried to do in this statement is point out that these are false choices. Climate change is already costing Iowans money. Weather varies too much and has too many drivers to attribute any particular event to a single cause like climate change. But there is a clear pattern of crop loss and property damage from increasingly frequent extreme events like flooding, drought, and dangerous storms. We don't face a choice between our economy and the planet. The choices between addressing the causes and effects of climate change are spending ever more money cleaning up from events like those we've seen in the past several years. This is not a statement of doom. There are investments that we can make that will allow us to adapt to some of the expected changes, and technological improvements continue to reduce the costs and increase the benefits of tackling the problem directly. But we gain nothing if we act as if there's uncertainty where there's not, or that there's significant division among scientists regarding the causes of climate change. Our goal in issuing this statement is to put a local face on the issue, with respected professors and researchers from all parts of the state agreeing to the basic message. Our hope is that reporters, civic and organizational leaders, and members of our community will see the names on the list that they know and trust and strike up a conversation with them about what climate change means for the people of Iowa and elsewhere. To give you more information about the statement itself, I'm going to introduce our two speakers. The first is going to be Chris Anderson. He's the assistant director of the Climate Science Program at Iowa State University. And the next is Jerry Schnorr. He's the co-director of the University of Iowa's Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research.
Thank you, David. The Iowa State Climate Science Program and the Bioeconomy Institute is happy to have assisted in crafting this statement on the 2012 drought and the climate warming. This builds upon IO-centric reports written by Dr. Tockley, the Climate Science Program Director, in support of the Iowa Climate Change Advisory Council and the Iowa DNR. An example of one of these reports is up front here, called Iowa or Climate Change Impacts on Iowa. And this is available online. The URL is included in the PR release. That climate has warmed is no longer disputed, and the effect is clear globally. Globally, over the past 30 years, there is clear statistical evidence that extreme high temperatures are occurring disproportionately more than extreme low temperatures. Now, in Iowa, climate warming has altered the frequency of rainfall extremes. Using the state climatologist data and with support from the Iowa Flood Center, we find that April through June rainfall is the best climatological indicator for floods. Further, we find that in the current 30-year period, that is since 1981, the likelihood of severely wet springs has more than doubled. What was once a 1 in 10-year wet spring is now occurring 2 to 3 times in every 10 years. Yet 2012 reminds us that dry summers can still happen, and when they do, substantial impacts are realized in agricultural productivity, the economic value chains built upon it, and municipal and rural community water utility and water quality. The 2012 July and August statewide rainfall was the lowest since 1976. It was even lower than 1988. It's the eighth driest in the 140-year record. So in short, there is recent evidence that shows climate warming means Iowans are dealing with a wider range of precipitation extremes. The connection between warmer climate and Iowa's rainfall extremes is water. A warmer climate contains more water in the air. More water in the air means storms can produce more rainfall. In Iowa, wet springs lead to cool summers. It seems counterintuitive, but the reason is because of our great soils. Recent examples are 2008, 2010, and 2011. In 2012, April through June, rainfall was much below normal, and we didn't have floods, but instead, July temperature ranked third highest in the 140-year record. The modulation of summer temperature by spring rainfall is a unique characteristic, and Iowa has its deep organic soils to thank for it. An immediate concern of wetter springs is that this summer cooling mechanism from our soils could be lost if steps are not taken to prevent loss of soil as the rain intensity continues its upward trend. While the future trajectory of Iowa's climate will be determined in part by human decisions regarding greenhouse gas emissions, our recent history tells us what can be predicted with certainty. Iowa's wet years will become wetter, and dry years will become drier, hotter. Thanks.
I'm Jerry Schnorr from the University of Iowa, the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research. And I also had the good fortune to chair the Iowa Climate Change Advisory Council and contribute to the report that you just saw from 2010. This is an update. But as global citizens in Iowa, we should be a part of the solution. And it's not all gloom and doom. Rather, there's some good news to be had in responding to the climate change and the challenge that we've heard about here today. We can transition our economy from one based on fossil fuels to one that's based on energy conservation, efficiency, and renewable energy, thus creating jobs and engine for economic development for the future of Iowa. We need to consider things like increasing wind energy to perhaps 40%, it's almost 20% of our electricity right now. We need to do a better job of weatherizing our home and in homes and improving our housing stock in Iowa, improving efficiency of pumps, fans, rotors, compressors, and even moving towards electric and hybrid cars, creating the incentives that will make that kind of thing happen. We need to expand solar and biomass energy, cogeneration and combined heat and power. Iowa's a great place to grow things, and that means that we can use our biomass to help power and fuel our economy. We need to recover energy from anaerobic digestion on farms and landfills and use the methane from those processes to create, through microturbines, electricity. We need to become leaders in biomass, biorefineries, and cellulosic biofuels from non-food crops. We need to shift subsidies from bike trails, from highways to bike trails and freight rail, and light rail and mass transit. We need to use natural gas to replace coal and electricity and bus fleets. And in short, Iowans need to adapt. We need to harden our infrastructure against the increased floods and drought frequency that we heard about earlier. And we need to mitigate. We need to be a part of the global solution to try to reduce our greenhouse gases in the future. For all those reasons, we're here today to try to answer your questions about Iowa's climate and the future for Iowa. And at this point, I'd open it up for questions.
Mr. Schnorr, what did you just say about hardening the infrastructure?
We need to harden our infrastructure such that, for example, like with Hurricane Sandy, where so many trees plow through so many electric lines and it takes so long to bring back on, we need to begin to bury our wires. We need to raise up our transformers and our electric substations at water plants and wastewater plants so they don't go down in the beginning of a flood. And we need to invest in that in order to have savings in the future.
Pushing to use the low river levels address some of the questions.
That's a good point. During a drought, when water levels are down, it's easier to raise up a lot of infrastructure and improve infrastructure against flooding. So we should be doing that, but perhaps it's human nature that we sort of lose our impetus and pressure and incentive to act on a flood when we're in the middle of a drought, but your point is well taken.
You referenced the need to become a leader in biomass and biorefineries from non-food sources. Are you saying we should move away from corn-based ethanol to some other ethanol?
The Renewable Fuel Standard 2 from EPA and from the Energy Independence and Security Act from Congress, we've essentially reached the plateau of corn and soybean requirements for conventional biofuels. It's time to look forward to the future, and that's towards cellulosic biofuels, and Iowa should be a leader in that.
You mentioned the highway angle. I was just curious, Jerry, did you ride your bike over here with my own?
No, but I did drive a hybrid electric car and got 40 miles to the gallon.
Not bad. What is your thought? I mean, are you having this press conference now because of the session coming up? I mean, is there some thought to be some organized way of looking at some of these issues? Because, as you know, the report came out, was it 08 originally?
Yes.
The 08 report had all kinds of ideas that, as far as I can tell, haven't had a lot of traction here at the State House yet. What is your plan now beyond the pressure on memory about the issue?
I guess that's the purpose of this statement and moving at this time while it's fresh on people's mind. The drought is sort of a teachable moment. But I agree that the 2008 report didn't receive too much attention or get much traction. There have been a few things that were mentioned in that report that have come to pass, sometimes for other reasons than state initiative. For example, wind energy has increased dramatically. Since 2008, that's a good thing. It's now 20% of our electricity demand. Secondly, we have done a lot of weatherization of our homes and our housing stock since that report, which was recommended there. And that's because essentially the stimulus funding under the ARRs, we had investment there. We have increased, for example, our contribution to biofuels. So some things have happened, but under federal mandates or other private industry like MidAmerica and Alliant expanding their wind farms.
No offense to the efforts, but most of those things seem like they were already in motion before maybe that it's helped add that. I mean, so can you think of anything that in that report that actually got implemented besides what you just mentioned? And is there any thought that you're still pushing for the government?
Some of the report had about 54 options. And 20-some had a short payback period and would essentially pay for themselves. Some of the things that were mentioned in the report include revolving loan funds for private people to improve energy efficiency on farms and in homes, and that has occurred, I think, as a result of the report.
But you're not like, you haven't set up a lobbying effort for this session?
No, we haven't. We have not.
Are you saying we're kind of reaping what we've sowed by not addressing these issues?
I'm saying that there's many things we can do that have a short payback period and would respond to the climate change issues. They would lower our greenhouse gas emissions and help us adapt to future climate change that we have not done and that would not cost us very much money.
Tell me about the 138 scientists here. Can you think of another situation that I'm talking inside and outside of this topic? Jerry or others, have you seen other joint letters by Iowa scientists with that range of signatures on it?
I haven't. I can't think of an issue that has had that kind of a consensus or has encouraged that many scientists to come out. There may well be some, but I'm not aware of any.
And what's going to be your message when those who still question the way of climate change comment on this?
What's, you mean as far as?
Well, you guys said there's a consensus. There are still at least a minority of people out there who want to say that that's not true and that this phenomenon doesn't exist.
Absolutely. What is your message? We tried to be very careful when putting together the statement, and I should, Chris and Jerry worked really hard to put together a statement that that the vast majority of scientists in Iowa could agree to. There were certainly a number of people who felt like the statement should be stronger, that we should go out more on a limb. But I think the consensus statement that we came up with is a very reasonable statement of the data that's out there. Now, certainly there still exist, skeptics, certainly in the area of how changes are going to be happening in the future. That's still complicated. But I don't think that the statement lends itself to significant criticism from the scientific community.
That there were 44 policymakers who were involved in this before, and now this is 138. I mean, that's a sign of growing consensus. You're saying that shows a growing consensus?
Well, so we had 44 scientists on the previous statement, and we have 138 on this one. We some people from more from other areas, other colleges signed it. I mean, there's certainly a growing consensus. I don't think that the numbers necessarily demonstrate, a tripling of the number of people who agree with this. What we were trying to do this time was we were trying to set up a system so that people could identify folks in, their towns or nearby that they felt like they could talk to with questions about climate change. So reporters or just anybody. And so we made a larger effort to go out and reach a larger number of people, distribute the statement to a larger number of people.
And if I'm the only one who didn't catch this, I can catch you later and have you explain it to me. But one of you seemed to be saying that soil erosion has something to do with this. You were talking about Iowa soils.
Yeah, perhaps I confused it. What I meant to say was this past summer when it was really hot, one thing that people tend to overlook when it gets hot is that we have really great soil in Iowa, and it has this really unique mechanism. This mechanism is when it rains a lot in the spring, it keeps our summer temperatures cooler. And so the clearest trend that we're seeing in Iowa's climate records is in the spring rainfall. Our spring rainfall is much higher than it has been in the 140-year record. And so what happens when there's more spring rainfall is there's potential and there is actual soil loss. And if we lose our soil, we lose this ability to keep ourselves cool in the summer. That's what I was trying to say.
You're saying the soil is absorbing the radiation. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I mean,
well, what happens when the soil is wet, it absorbs, it transforms, it takes all that radiation into it, and it transforms it into water coming out of the soil, as opposed to heat coming out of the soil.
So that number we have, this is what you add.
That's correct. That's when we make the statement that drier years will become hotter, the soil can mask some of the heat in years when we have wet springs. But when we have a very dry spring, it becomes very apparent how hot it is because of the feedback from the soil.
So what about climate change makes the extremes? I think a lot of people have difficulty understanding that if they don't study this kind of thing, how one factor of climate change can cause both extreme dryness, but also extreme wetness and flooding.
Right. I think what is hard for people to understand is that in the general media, it's just the temperature part of climate change, of climate warming, that gets discussed all the time. But Iowa, like I said in our statement, is unique. The change in Iowa has more to do with the water we have in the state, not so much to do with the temperature in the state. And so this statement allows us to clarify the nuance in climate warming that we experience in Iowa.
I hear that you're he said the drop's a good time to discuss this, but you also, I believe, made the comment which sort of you can't ascribe this drop directly to climate change.
No, that's correct.
You can't ascribe one event,
right?
Hurricane on the East Coast.
That's correct. I think what the
30-year trend of more rainfall base, which appears to be consistent with the modeling.
The more rainfall is directly related to how warm our oceans have become. That allows there to be more water vapor in the air. And much of the warming in the ocean over the past 30 years has been attributed to the increase in greenhouse gases. What we were trying to say here is that this year, this 2012 drought cannot be attributed to any kind of warming. It's just one event. But it is consistent with what projections are showing as near as the 2030s and 2040s. Correct. That's right. He has other commitments today.
David, you made the comment that climate change is we're living with it now, and it's already costing us money. Have you been able to quantify what that cost is?
No, we didn't come, only for each individual flood has there been a cost.
Right. So the issue is that again, if you can't attribute individual events, you can't say here's how much it costs in this particular case. And certainly some of the extreme events are where some of the extreme costs come from. So if what we can say is that the trend is highly consistent with what we expect, and these kinds of events are the sorts of things that have been predicted and that we expect to become significantly more frequent in the future, that's where the claim or the statement that it's costing us money. There's a trend in the direction that that we expect. We have every reason to imagine that some of those events are climate related, at least in part.
Could our Drake professor pronounce his name?
Yes, it's David Carrard Howery. Thank you very much for coming. If you have further questions, we can certainly speak with people individually.